to introduce the main speaker for this evening, Walter N. from Redlands, California.
All right. Jeez. Do I really need this? My name is Walter Moore, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm happy to be sober. Pretty happy to be here tonight with you all. You have a pretty good group here, big group. I love this. You know, I want to thank Larry for asking me to come and speak. There he is. Thank you very much. Asked me a couple days ago. I said, I'll be there. Got to know Larry and a few of you others over at Palos Verdes, at Johnny Harris's little get-together, and we go over the book and all of that. You know, I have a couple of gentlemen here. I want to thank John and Mark for coming with me. A couple of sponsees here. It's kind of nice to pile them in the car and have a captive audience for a little while, isn't it? You know, we're pulling out the book as we're actually driving down here, and it's amazing how many life issues come up just in general conversation, and somehow it ties automatically into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the only real authority in Alcoholics Anonymous. And lo and behold, there's answers in there, and you watch newcomers' eyes go, wow, really? It's pretty cool stuff. I want to welcome the newcomers here, those who identified as newcomers and those who did not. There's always some, isn't there? Our pride and our shame is just too much. But you don't understand how I feel and think about it. And I always tell them, I don't care how you think and feel about it. You're a newcomer. And thank God you're in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And congratulations to those that took the 90-day chips. Congratulations to Sal for 1 year. That's an amazing thing for an alcoholic to go for a year. And God bless you, Sal, for saying what you said, that your life changed when you took the steps. And that's really the heart of it, isn't it? It isn't just the fellowship. It isn't all the fun stuff that we do. It's taking the steps and incorporating spiritual principles. And you watch people's lives change in Alcoholics Anonymous like Sal's. And Claire, where did Claire go? Happy birthday, Claire. That's a long time to be sober. I love what you said, too, because I came into Alcoholics Anonymous with the misunderstanding that if I just didn't drink, my life would be okay. And then I started hearing from people with years like you do, Claire, you know, that life doesn't always give us rainbows and lollipops, you know, that can be tough. And yet, despite that, stay sober and be happy and useful anyway. And that's what I think you were talking about. You know, one of the greatest promises in the book that says right there, that just to the extent that we would do as he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. It doesn't take away the calamity. We get to match it with serenity. And I bet you if you were asked Claire, that's the type of events that she's talking about. And that's what I need in my life. You know, I was in a hurry to kind of get here this evening, so I was over at the gas station filling up with gas. Wasn't thinking too much, and I went and pulled away, and all of a sudden I hear this big bang. And I look in my rearview mirror, and I had driven away with the gas thing still stuck in my... I yanked the hose right off the pump. And all these people are standing there looking at me, and I wanted to say, really, I'm sober. I haven't done this since I was drunk, you know. Did you ever do that drunk? I've done it where I hadn't even filled it up with gas yet, and I'm driving away, And then I just leave it there, and I drive away and realize I'm not empty, and I got to go to another gas station, pay another $28, you know, or whatever it is, you know. Oh, my gosh. It's some beautiful stuff being sober, I tell you what. But we can pull some things even while we're sober. You know, Lance did a good job, didn't he, with his 10-minute speaking up here. He talked about, you know, didn't want to be so lame as to do the things he's doing. And yet he's talking about reconnecting with his father, being a professional carpenter, getting married, and his life turning around. That's good message for newcomers and Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, my sobriety date is December 11, 2005. My home group is the Attitude Adjustment Meeting in Redlands, California. We meet at 6:30 in the morning in the gymnasium of a mental hospital. I'm oddly at home there. We meet every single day of the week. We have between 70 and 120, sometimes more on Saturdays when we celebrate birthdays. And every morning when I'm in town, I'm at that meeting, whether I feel like it or not. I feel that I have a commitment to show the newcomers that my life has changed and hopefully theirs can too. I have the privilege of sponsoring some guys. My sponsor is Dave Schulte. He just celebrated 30 years of sobriety. My grand sponsor is Bob Lemke. I don't know if you've had him speak here yet, but he's somebody you ought to get. Been around for a long time. He'll be celebrating 50 years of continuous sobriety come January. So you're welcome to come to the Windsor Club and have banana splits. He buys banana splits for everybody afterwards, and we have a good time. Well, let me tell you a little bit about me. I was born in East L.A., Los Angeles, at the White Memorial Hospital. And when I was born at that hospital, I was bald, I was broke, and utterly helpless. I cried a lot and had little control over bodily functions. And if you had asked me, is that newborn baby, Walter, how'd you end up here? I would have had no answer for you. At age 48, I'm in a hospital where I'm bald, broke, and utterly helpless. I'm crying a lot and have little control over bodily functions. Yeah, ha ha. You said share in a general way. I have some great stories for afterwards on that. And if you'd asked me, Walter, how'd you end up at this hospital at age 48 years old? I would have had no answer for you. I would have told you I drank too much, but it didn't seem to really be the full answer. You know, isn't it strange that I ended up at that same spot when I remember hearing stories like Lance's, coming from homes with all kinds of problems, whatever they are. Their parents are drunk. There is no, you know, lots of jail, all of this kind of stuff. I was raised in a good family, the exact opposite, and yet I end up at the exact same spot. There's a reason for that. I was raised by a father who's a physician. We spent 2 years as a missionary. He was a missionary doctor for 2 years in Indonesia. We were brought up in church. We were in church every single week. We're sitting in the second row right up front. I was involved in happily so. I could do dueling Bible verses with the best of you. I had a good time. I went to all Christian schools. There's no violence. There's no cursing. There's no drugs. There's no alcohol. There's no tobacco. We didn't even play cards. And I wasn't rebellious about that. I was happy doing that. I had every intention of going to medical school like my father, of becoming a husband and having some children. I'm the oldest of five, so I always envisioned myself as being the one that when my folks got too old, that I would be my house where everybody would come for the holidays. You know, I'd be the leader of the family. I went to all Christian schools. I went to a boarding academy, co-ed, right on the beach in Monterey. Beautiful school. Resort living. Fantastic. And I knew it was the best years of my life. I went to my first year of college, and I'm living in a dormitory with a roommate. We're at a college where if we get caught with alcohol, we're going to get kicked out. That's how strict they are. We weren't even allowed to have cars as freshmen in college. And he comes home from home leave, and he locks the door, and he asks me if I can keep a secret. And, of course, I say yes. And opens up his luggage and pulls out a bottle. And he tells me it's Bacardi 151. I have never heard of Bacardi before in my life, and I had no idea what 151 meant. He puts it in a blue plastic cup, a tall one. He colors it up with some Coke. Tells me to be careful. And behind a locked door, I have my very first drink of alcohol. Now remember, I came from a good home. And yet when I took that drink of alcohol, I didn't know it was humanly possible to feel that good. I didn't. And I realized my parents lied to me. They told me alcohol was the gateway drug to heroin, and heroin was the gateway drug to hell and to death itself. They lied. It's the gateway to heaven. It's a God shot. This stuff is, I don't know about you, but it's like, I lost fears I had no idea I even had. I'm about as chaste a virgin as you can be at 19 years old. I'm 6'4" and 165 pounds. I know I look like I just walked out of Auschwitz, for crying out loud. But that drink of alcohol, I'm cool. Women didn't scare me. The idea of going into medicine and follow my father, I am good. I started and never finished 4 different colleges. I had no idea at the time that that was untreated alcoholism. As my life started to unravel and go all kinds of different directions, never once did I say, the reason I'm not being able to go on track with all these dreams that I want to have fulfilled in my life could be accomplished. I had no idea with this thing. I bumped around for a while and ended up at, I'm approaching the age of 30 and I'm living at home with mommy and daddy, like a good loser alcoholic, you know. And I came up with the brilliant idea that I want to get married. And realize, you know, what woman in her right mind would want me? I'm a loser. I wouldn't want the woman who would want me. She'd have to be an equal loser, you know. You know, we alcoholics can be pretty self-willed and determined and set goals, a lot of us. I decided that I wanted to be able to get into law school. And I found a way to get in. I'm going to tell you this, not to tell you about how good I am, but I'm going to tell you about how powerful alcoholism is. I got into law school with no college degree, not even an AA degree. I never even took the law school admission test. I took CLEP exams in lieu of an AA degree. I passed the baby bar when the first year bar exam, when it was pass rate was 17%. I passed the big bar the first time. I know how to set goals and achieve them and take the steps forward to do that. And there's many of us in this room that know how to do that and have accomplished some great things in our lives in that respect. But when I use that same effort, that same willpower, that same ability to set out the steps in order to achieve that goal, I was an utter failure when it came to stopping drinking. And time again, I would end up messing it up, and I couldn't figure it out. I'm a smart guy. I should be able to figure this out. And why is it the people with less talent and less potential? I always knew I had potential. My mommy said so, you know. And I believe my mommy, you know. And speaking of mothers, I don't know. In my little selfish walk through life, I have always been looking for the woman that loved me as much as I loved myself. And the only one who comes close is my mommy, and that's a little weird, you know. More about mom later. While I was in law school, I found her. At this point, I'm working full-time during the day at a hospital and driving down to Orange County to go to law school, and I did that for several years. It was also during this time when I was taking up some other activities. I was stealing injectable drugs right out of the crash cart at Parkview Community Hospital right there in Riverside. I can talk about that now because the statute of limitations has passed. Yeah. You know, and speaking of that, you know, we've all done a lot of things like that in our lives. And people like to ask me, and I think some people this evening said, Walter, how are you? And I like answering, better than I deserve. And I know that rankles some people, but let me tell you why I say it's better than I deserve. That if my family heard the real truth about Walter, they wouldn't have me around even to this day. Some of the things, I don't think they would let me around. And yet I do have them in my life. That if the state bar heard my fifth step, they would tell me, you don't have a license to practice anymore. If the DMV heard my fifth step, they would say, you know, nice try, but you shouldn't be driving at all, even now. If the sheriff heard my fifth step, he'd say, you know, we have a special little vacation spot for you over here. And yet none of those things happened to me. Isn't it strange that throughout my life I kept saying, it isn't fair. How come other people are doing so much better? I think Lance even talked about that. It just doesn't seem right. I always felt life was unfair. I wasn't being treated the way I should be treated. It wasn't until I did my fourth and fifth step that I found out that life has been unfair to me, unfairly kind. That the God of my understanding has somehow protected me and carried me through, even when I didn't realize it at the time, to end up with my getting into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I have family members that are going through that same kind of journey, and I end up having to say, you know what, God, you kept me alive and safe long enough to get here. they're going to have to be in your hands as well, because there's nothing I can do about that. So I met her at this hospital, and shortly after that, we got married. Outdoor wedding, beautiful, out in Oregon. I was drinking myself blind drunk every night. I'd wait for her to go to bed and tried to hide it, and did a pretty good job of that. 2 months into the marriage, I decided I wanted to quit drinking because I finally had her. Everything that I'd always wanted was now coming true in my life, and that I needed to quit. I had no idea how dangerous it is to detox off of alcohol, and I quit cold turkey. Up to this time, just before this, I was going through, here's what I would do. I was in such bad shape that I would leave the house and go to the office where I worked alone. I would lock the office up, turn off the lights, put down the blinds, undo the phone. I would lay down on the floor behind the desk so that if people were looking through the doors, they wouldn't be able to see me. And I'm lying there shaking and crying and trying to get to sleep. Can't figure out what's going on. I have no idea. I'm thinking I'm having a nervous breakdown. And maybe I was. I don't know. But I know now today that that was untreated alcoholism. I'm absolutely miserable, and I can't figure out what's going on. I can't drive because I'm shaking so badly. Finally, I realized that on the back of our professional car, there's a confidential number. I called them, and I'm one of those kinds of guys that when I get to talking and crying, I end up then not being able to talk. And so she's asking me yes and no questions. I'm going, well, because I'm on the floor talking with her. She tells me I need to get to a hospital. So I go out to my vehicle, and I start to drive to Tri-City Hospital here. And where is it? Vista. In Vista. That's where I was heading. Only I couldn't get there, and I realized I'm going to be blacking out or going to DTs again, something. And so I pull over to the side of the road, and when I come to, it's blackout, and I can't figure out where I am. It takes me a long time to get oriented to getting up at the hospital. I was in that hospital for 5 days. This was in 1992. My wife showed up so angry. I never stepped foot in that house again. She annulled the marriage, claiming that I was a fraud because I hadn't disclosed to her that I was an alcoholic. I was hurt by that. Turns out she was right. She wrote a long, pages-long, scathing, open letter to everybody who knew me, my family, coworkers, and all that. Huge, long letter. I wish I had kept that letter. She would have saved me a lot of time on my fourth step because she pointed out stuff that I could have just stapled it to the back of a sheet and said, here's sponge, there's my fourth step. My mommy came to my rescue. She arranged for me to go to a faith-based program. They couldn't take me for a couple of days, so I went to Palm Springs, you know, to kind of bridge that gap. Swore I wasn't going to drink, but everybody knows what I did. I got in the motel room, and I can't sleep, and I can't go in there looking a mess, so I got to have some drinks to be able to sleep. I showed up at the faith-based program. They asked me if I was willing to do anything to be sober. I said, yes. They said, we found out that our three-month program hasn't worked. It's now 1 year. Are you willing to stay here for 1 year? Yes, I said. They asked me if I'd be willing to mow lawns to help support the organization rather than practice law. I said, yes, I did not want to drink again. They offered me a program that they believed would work. A lot of church, some counseling, a lot of socialization, that kind of thing. At the end of 1 year, we had a big old celebration. We actually had graduation where we had a dinner, white tablecloths, family, you know, flowers, the whole thing. And I was congratulated for having done a year program. And for a while, I stayed dry. You know, I did not realize that untreated alcoholism can eat me alive from the inside out, even while stark raving sober. I did not know that. Go for several years like that. Ended up asking this girl out on a date. It was our first date, and we go to the Forum, where our firm had season tickets 8 rows behind the Laker bench. It's Senate seating where the girls come down and take your drink orders. So she asked me if I wanted a drink. She ordered one. She asked me, so I had a drink. I often reflect on that because in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the story of Jim becomes the closest to what I was thinking then. Because I had not had a drink in a while, and I'm thinking it's been a long time. This is a little foo-foo girly drink. This is nothing, you know. So I took that drink. In the back of my mind, I feel but I felt reassured I was going to be okay. And I didn't get drunk. What's the obvious conclusion? I'm making too big a deal out of this, right? Boy, it didn't take long, and I ended up in really, really bad shape. By this point, I remember showing up at court. I can't make it up the steps. I'm sweating through everything. I'm going through the DTs a lot, you know. I don't remember a lot of it. A lot of it's brownout kind of stuff. I remember sitting there. I can't go in the courtroom. A lady that I've known for years asked me how I'm doing, and all I do is break down and start crying, and I don't know why. I contributed it to stress, not enough money, wasn't treated right at work. You know how we do, all the rationalizations, all of that kind of stuff, and I have no idea really what's going on. I'm now can't afford a house, so I'm living in motels. I'm going around to motels where they're cheap. I would always get 3 days at a time because these places are so cheap they don't change your sheets, okay? And if you're a drinker like I am, you need clean sheets after 3 days. And so I would always just go to another motel. You know that. So I'm going around all of those kinds of places to do that. I went up to... I'm so bad off now that even the next morning while I'm probably still drunk, but not as drunk as I was the night before, got into a head-on collision, totaled both cars. I remember his eyes looking at me because I went through the red light and he's making a left right in front of me and pushed him all the way back up on the center divider. Right in front of the coffee house, Stell's there in Redlands, which is a hangout for AAs. So there are probably a bunch of AAs going, oh, drunk driver out there. Yeah, because I'm... I go out to a court. This is right at the end. I go out to a court, and I'm so badly hungover that I show up an hour and a half late. The court's already closed, and I thought for sure I was going to lose my license. I was going to get sued by the client. I was going to get fired. It was at that point. This is the Tuesday before Thanksgiving of 2005. I had finally just given up. I didn't care what happened to me. I didn't care about the license anymore. I didn't care. I was through. I had nothing in me. I had no fight left. I don't know if any of you got to that spot where whatever happens, I don't care. I don't remember the drive back to that motel. And the next thing I know, I'm on the floor doing the rapture of the damned. The DT's on the floor again. You know, up to this time, I'd also been coming to the hospital's emergency care a lot. Because I'm seeing water flowing down the walls, and I think I'm standing in water, and I can't keep my balance. Turns out I have polycythemia vera, and they kept asking me, are you drinking, Mr. Moore? And I kept saying no, because I go to a church where they, you know, I'd be in big trouble if they found out I was drinking at all. I can't even cop to the two beers. I finally end up doing those DTs on the floor. I realize I'm in deep, deep trouble. You know, it's during this last little bit that I'm passed out on the bed in that motel room. This is the Stardust Motel, room 16, where I'm there with all the other drunks, you know. And I'm the type that I always drank naked in bed with the lights out kind of a thing, you know. And all of a sudden I hear bang, 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 bang. Thank God I heard the bang. And I look and I can't see the door. But I go to where I know the door is supposed to be. And I open up the door, and here's all these people standing there looking at me, and this smoke coming out of the room. So I'm standing there, you know. Well, I turn around so they can get even the other side. And my bed's on fire. Yeah. Hey. Yeah, she just got a bad visual on that one. So I gave him $200, the owner of it. He was very mad at me, you know. And I went across the other side of the freeway and started drinking over there. And there's finally where my last hurrah was, where I'm on the floor. And I am shaking so badly, I realize I need help. So I tried calling 911 three times, but I can't. I give up because I'm shaking so badly, I can't hit 911. It turns out I called them all three times, and two crews came and strapped me to a gurney and took me off. I had a vague recollection of one guy, you know, because here's all these EMTs in the room. And one of them's going, holding up the bottle. By this time, I'm only drinking bottles that are the big bottles. And they got the handles on it because I'm shaking so badly. I even changed my signature because I can't even write anymore. Did you ever do that? Realize I need to change it because that way they won't know I'm drinking. They just think I just need to change my identity in here and change my signature. And every bottle for a long time at the end was my last bottle. I only bought one bottle at a time. I can't live like this anymore. This is my last one. I'm not going to do it. And we were talking about it on the way down that you can't go to the same liquor store and know how much you're drinking, so you hop around, right? That's a common trick. So they strapped me into the hospital, and I'm in there and realize, you know, it's coming up on Thanksgiving. Remember, that was the Tuesday before Thanksgiving of 2005. And I asked her, what day is it? Because I figured I'd get cleaned up and go to the family. Did you ever do this when you go to the family? Well, how come you showed up late? Well, I'm tired, stressed, a lot of work, blah, 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 da, da, da. And then you eat, and then, you know, you wait for the right kind of moment where you could just be gone, and you don't have to say goodbye, and you have any excuses or lies. You know, I did that a lot. Only this time I didn't show up at all, because it turns out that the day that I went into the hospital was Sunday after Thanksgiving, so I had a 6-day blackout. People told me they came to see me. I have to believe them. I don't remember much. At the time, they asked me whether I wanted to go to a local treatment center. Remember, I told you that my home group is in the gymnasium of a mental hospital. Well, professionally, I'd helped out a lot of people in that hospital, and I did not want to have the shame of running into them looking like I was. So I decided to go out to a fancy one out in the desert. So I went out to them for 90 days. Absolutely beautiful place. Serene, quiet. True professionals out there. These guys and women are published experts in the area of recovery. They're testifying before Congress on issues of recovery. At that facility, I got an amazing intellectual awakening about what they believed alcoholism was. I learned about the pleasure centers of the brain, the amygdala, and dopamine reuptake inhibitors, and I learned about why I was messed up because I'm the oldest of five children, because birth order had something to do with it, and about my inability to cope with stress, to, you know, I couldn't set proper boundaries. I somehow always got involved in toxic relationships. I mean, it just went on and on and on, right? They made me do a list of the 20 negative consequences to drinking. I said, well, you can come up with 2,000 of them. What do you mean 20 negative consequences? I learned nothing from that list, by the way. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, did you jump ahead a little bit? When I was asked, can you name 20 positive consequences from taking a drink? I looked at them and said, that's got to be crazy. It always has negative consequences. Until I took a look at it. The doctor's opinion even talks about it. It says that alcoholics are restless, irritable, and discontent unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort that comes from taking a drink. There's two of them right there. I don't understand folks that say that alcohol doesn't work for them. I've proven for many, many years, all my life, and I know today that if I get away from the God of my understanding and His care and protection, away from the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, that for at least a while, alcohol will do that for me. It will have a benefit for me. Because I'll feel like I'm coming apart. I've got ground glass coming through my veins. I can't live like that. Something has to change. I can't sleep. I can't breathe, for crying out loud. Finally, that feeling that I got at age 19 when I was in college, that's always the tape that I'll play, is that, because that's the good memory I have. And I'll make the insane decision to take that drink again down there. So here I am at this facility. They almost kicked me out twice because they made me do a first step on sex because I was flirting with all the girls. And fraternization was not allowed. I did a relapse prevention plan. Do you ever do one of these? But the Gorski relapse prevention plan grid and all this stuff. Thank God that I had a sponsor that understood the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and told me to burn that thing and give it to God. We were talking a lot about triggers on the way down. I'm gonna out you right now. Mark here's got 21 days, but didn't want to come up. Just gonna give him. And I asked him on the way down, do you think it's possible that if you're in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that you can live in a trigger-free world? No. Doesn't seem possible, does it, at 21 days? How in the world can you be out there with the real meat eaters and be able to live and deal with family and deal with work and deal with IRS and deal with whatever it is you have to do and live in a trigger-free world? The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, point blank, promises that we can live in a trigger-free world. That as long as I'm spiritually fit and have a legitimate purpose for being there, I can go anywhere with anyone and do anything. And that God will keep me safe and protected if I'm doing His work anywhere. If you want that kind of freedom, that kind of liberty, as a newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous, I absolutely promise you. That's not the answer that I got, because when I was at that facility, I found that the people were in facilities a bunch of times. One guy was at Betty Ford for the third time. And I found out there's people there, been there 10, 20, 25 times at other facilities. And that this is my first time. I'd never been to one of these kinds of things before. And here I'm paying all this money, and I got upset with this. I got pretty angry. I didn't realize I was just scared until later. Said, can you promise me that I won't do like those guys are doing, and that I could stay sober if I did exactly what you told me to do? And I said, in fact, if you told me that the way I had to do this thing and guarantee me that I could stay sober is if I only did it in a blue dress and high heels, I would do it. And he laughed too. Only I started crying, and I wanted to slap the guy. I wanted assurance that I wasn't going to drink again. I can't live like this anymore, please. He couldn't promise it. It wasn't until I got to you guys in Alcoholics Anonymous that a sponsor was saying, you don't have to drink again ever if you do the things we tell you. Rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. Not some made up other path, lots of more shortcuts and all of that stuff. All of the research and development, all the deaths that need to occur for me to be able to have a program that actually works has already been done if I'm willing to follow the directions that are in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I did not want to leave treatment. I felt safe and protected there. Wonderful people. You know, and I'm talking, please don't misunderstand. These are good people. They help a lot of people. It's only from the good of their heart that they're providing this kind of service. But for a real alcoholic like me, that found out that that's not going to work. I did not want to leave the treatment. Told me it's time to go home. I get in my car and I go back to work. And I show up at that morning meeting and I look around the room and I only notice two people. One was an immense guy. You couldn't miss him. And the other guy was so ugly, I said, that dude drank a lot. And next day he was my sponsor. Oh, that'll teach you to be judgmental. Oh, man. And I'm a mess. I'm watching people in Alcoholics Anonymous at that treatment center after they've been sober for, you know, 60 days, 90 days. And they're leaving and they're talking about, I'm leaving today. Thank you for all the tools. I've never felt better in my life. And I'm going, I don't understand what you're talking about. Because that's not my experience. In fact, whatever little good feeling was going on, quickly as I'm getting back to work and people are expecting me to now act like a good employee, a, you know, good, all this stuff, the pressures start mounting and I start to go a little bit nuts. I cannot sleep. I am always worried about money. I am so scared that every, I mean, my mind is going 1,000 miles an hour and the emotions that I have are opposite emotions at the exact same time. She just gave me a 10. Oh, that's 10 minutes. Okay. You know, I'll take any compliment I can get. I love you too. Well, then let me skip a little bit ahead here. I didn't realize I was suffering from untreated alcoholism, stark raving dry, and a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that the only thing that was going to change me was that I would place myself unreservedly in the care of a loving God the way I had seen other people in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous do. And I got to know some of the people that were in that room, and I'd see them and they'd be all happy. And he's got 20 years. And you say he's all happy. And I said, well, you know, if I had his car and his wife and his hair, I'd be happy too. And it turns out that when I would talk to him, got to know him personally, found out that he's going through some incredible challenges in his life. Incredible challenges, but he's not in that room crying about them. He has a sponsor and he has a God. But he also has a duty to help out the newcomers, and when he shows up to be able to help them and be the giver instead of the taker at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, the newcomer never even realizes they see somebody who's happy and useful despite all the pain and the suffering that's going on at that moment. Is that what you were talking about, Clara? It's a beautiful thing to see. You know, let me touch on one little thing. Sometimes you'll hear in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous that, boy, when I'm feeling bad or I'm restless or ill, discontent or selfish or scared or fearful or angry, I know to come to a meeting because that's where I'll fill up on my spiritual gas tank. My sponsor made it painfully clear that I'll ever fall for that idea. That in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks about what it is that Walter needs to do to stay happy and useful. And it's not to show up at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and expect you to be given to me. As a newcomer, absolutely. We want to give everything we can to the newcomer. All the love, joy, faith, support, hope, love, all of it, forgiveness, all of it. But at some point, for me to stay sober, I have to be the giver of that. That if I am so stressed out that I only have little tiny bit of spiritual gas in my gas tank, you know what I'd better do with this according to my sponsor and according to Bill's example in the first chapter? Go find somebody who's on empty. Give all of that gas away. Give it all away. The spiritual principle is that if that newcomer accepts it, their spiritual gas tank is lifted and mine is lifted as well. That's the spiritual principle, that as long as I'm always a taker, there'll be some meetings where you guys don't have anything to give to me. And I'm going to end up after a series of those not being able to do that. Let me tell you about my very first exposure to Alcoholics Anonymous. When I was done with that faith-based program, throughout that program, they poo-pooed AA. They got nothing over there. Poo-pooed it, the whole thing. Well, I was curious, so after I graduated, I went to a noon meeting in Riverside. Now, this isn't to pick on that meeting. This is just my experience at that one meeting. I go to that noon meeting. Nobody says, what's your name? Who's your sponsor? What's your sobriety date? Do you have a big book? Do you have a directory? Would you like to join us for some other function that's coming up? There was nothing like that. Afterwards, some said, you know, keep coming back. I realized now that they're saying, you know, that kind of thing. I walked away from that meeting convinced that what they told me at the faith-based program was correct. There is nothing in Alcoholics Anonymous. And unfortunately, that's true in too many. I didn't get that feeling when I came here tonight that there's always a group at its core that are givers, that are here to be able to find somebody that needs some hope and love, some forgiveness, some understanding. because we've been in exactly where you place you are right now. Because I know that there are people in here that are suffering from untreated alcohol and start breaking sober, because I did it too. I know. What do I got? 5 minutes? My father was high on my resentment list. My father, shortly after I got sober, well, let me tell you, before when I was newly sober, he never congratulated me. Thank God, you know, you're sober. Love you, son. He'd always ask me, you know, you go into church and if you quit smoking. Always the same two questions. He didn't believe in eating meat, so he was at a old age home where they didn't serve meat. But every once in a while, he'd call me up right in the middle of work and want me to take him out for a hamburger. Yeah. So I called my sponsor all upset. He's wanting me to take me, you know, away from my work, right in the middle of the work, you know. What do I tell him to have him understand? He said, go get your father and get him a hamburger, for crying out loud. So I'd go over there. I was not happy about it. I did not like it. He'd walk all slow to the car. It took forever. Man, I got work to do, Dad. I'm going. Get him in the car, take him through the drive-thru. What do you want? Well, couldn't make up his mind. And yet it was always a cheeseburger. He'd get the cheeseburger and he'd have some complaints about it. He never finished it. Then I'd drive him back to the facility. He did that many times. Or he had to be taken to the hospital or to the pharmacy. He was poisoning himself to death. And eventually he was successful in that. And at his memorial service, the rest of the family was disgusted with my father. They were ashamed of him. They hadn't seen him in many months up until he died. The only person who was comfortable with where he left his relationship with his father was me. And it wasn't because my father changed. In fact, he got worse and died. It's because the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that the examples that I got from people in rooms like this allowed the power of God to change me so that my view of my father was different. And I actually, with all of his problems and all of his warts, I loved that man. And I was at peace with where he was. And I was the one then that when we cremated him on the way back from Asilomar with Johnny Harris and the whole weekend up there, stopped by Pismo Beach, one of his favorite places in the world where he wanted his ashes taken, and I got to put his ashes on the beach. And that to this day, I'm okay with my father. Not because he finally showed me respect or love or understanding, but because I did what I was supposed to do as a sober son. That kind of experience is profound. It was not possible for me in my own power to be able to do that. And yet for everybody in this room, the ability then to have a God working in your life, and more importantly, through your life to help out a newcomer, will transform your lives, I promise you. I know because I've watched others do it ahead of me, and I've experienced it myself. One last little thing. When I was at Betty Ford, we'd go to bed. I was in a room with 5 other roommates. I would struggle to make sure my roommates didn't hear me crying. I couldn't believe at 48 I trashed my life so much. Everything seemed overwhelming. I wanted to never leave there. I didn't want to face my mom ever again. I couldn't stand the idea that she loved me and wanted to hug me because I felt undeserving. I didn't want her. It drove me crazy. Tonight, I'm going to go home. I'm going to put my head on that pillow. I got to spend some time with some sponsees, an absolute privilege. I got to spend some time with other sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to carry the message and how it changed my life. And that I'm going to have a quiet heart and a peaceful mind when I go to bed tonight. If that's what you want, I promise you, you will get it in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you for letting me share.